Hey everyone, just taking a quick 15 seconds to let you know that my new book, The Fitness Mindset, Eat for Energy, Train for Attention, Manage Your Mindset, and Reap the Results, which hit the bestseller list within 24 hours of its release, is now available to buy on Amazon. So if you're looking for everything you need to get into incredible shape and the mindset to keep it forever, be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness to share tips about all things that can support you on your journey to becoming the best version of yourself and build a bulletproof mindset to get whatever you want out of life. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today, I'm so excited to have my guest, Chase, with me on the show today. Chase is a Virginia native and Army veteran with a degree in physical education and exercise science. After learning how to walk again after being medically discharged from the military, he's since gone on to become an incredibly successful personal trainer and entrepreneur. Chase, welcome to the show.
Brian, cheers, man. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Man, you've got such an extensive background in terms of your fitness, your military, your entrepreneur, your business. Is there anything else you want to tell my audience about you in terms of your background, where you came from, that I might have left out in the introduction?
Yeah, really good question. I think one thing that not a lot of people know is that I grew up a country boy. My brother and I, my sister, my whole family, we grew up down, way down in what we call the sticks, like Southwest Virginia. But it was an amazing childhood, man. We grew up on about 200 acres in the mountains, just with my parents, my grandparents. I don't think I remember a day growing up where I wasn't just outside making a fort, running through the creek, just, you know, running through the mountains. It was a great childhood.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, I get that myself. I grew up in the country out here in the West, in the sticks, as you would say. Very accurate description. So what got you into fitness first? Because you obviously, it's very much part of your lifestyle brand now, your business, your life in general, you're working with people. What got you into fitness?
Well, kind of going back to my childhood description, I never really knew what it was like to not be active. Like I said, you know, every day pretty much, our parents, my grandparents didn't let us back in the house, basically. Like, the sun's out, you're outside. So my whole life with my siblings, we just grew up outdoors playing, running around. And then I played baseball basically my whole life, kind of starting in elementary school, going through middle school, a little bit of high school, a little bit of lacrosse. So I was just always a physically active person. My family was very active. Our vacations consisted of going on like mountain biking trips and road trips and things like that. So activity was just something ingrained in me from a very young age. And then after that, I kind of was waffling between what I wanted to do when I grow up. You know, I didn't really know what I wanted to study per se in school and kind of had some ideas. So I kind of just decided instead of wasting time and money to save some money and invest my time in a different way. And I continued a family tradition of military service. So after my senior year of high school, actually halfway through my senior year of high school, I enlisted in the U.S. Army for a six-year active duty contract. So I went from just active childhood, probably stepping into the most active job anyone could have in their entire life. And then from there, you know, of course, I learned a different way to be active, different way to be fit. The Army, the military gives you a lot of different perspectives on what that looks like and means. And then afterwards, you know, through some injuries and transformations, I kind of just had to relearn what physical activity and exercise meant for me and how I could do it in a different way.
Okay, awesome. Talk to me about, because I don't know this full background story about when you got discharged from the Army.
Yeah.
What happened there? What's the kind of the background to that?
So full disclosure, my injuries and medical discharge, it was not because of a combat related incident, but I was on my way there. So my job, I was in the intelligence community and I volunteered a couple times for some specific deployments. The first one fell through because I wasn't a certain rank at the time, but the second one was looking pretty promising. And so anytime you go to war, anytime you get deployed, you have to go through pre-deployment training. Basically, you get spun up in any specifics for your mission. And also, for lack of a better term, you play war games. And so I was a few days into my war games and I was leading my team against the opposing force, you know, the fake enemy, during an ambush, leading a convoy ambush. And just in the heat of the battle, so to speak, I wound up pretty significantly injuring myself. I tore my hamstring. I kind of slipped my L4, L5 vertebrae. And from there, it just kind of snowballed into much bigger problems and compensation issues, trying to get back on the deployment roster. I wound up, long story short, basically did some significant damage to my back and my hips. So I wound up having both my hips completely reconstructed. So they surgically dislocated my femur, shaved down a fair amount, cleaned up my hip joint, put it back in. They gave me 2 pins in either side. Each process took about 8 months recovery. I had to learn how to walk again. They would go back, cut me open to the other side, another 6-8 month recovery time, learn how to walk again. And then at that point, I became non-deployable. And in the military, once you become non-deployable, you're really no longer a soldier. So it sounds harsh, but they don't have a use for you anymore. And so I got medically retired at the age of about 23. So yeah. Retirement came quick.
Yeah, I can imagine. Is that when you went down the exercise, personal training, fitness route?
Or was yeah, during that time, I mean, interacting, I feel like every time anyone does what I do or anyone in the fitness community, it's because you either just grew up with it and you naturally just loved it, or you wound up hurting yourself and like had some transformation story. So mine's a little bit of the transformation story. So I really became amazed at a few of the physical therapists I was working with and my doctors. And just how I had to relearn what daily living, daily functioning, daily movement, let alone trying to exercise again, what that looked like and what that had to mean for me moving forward, because I can no longer be a soldier. I can no longer, you know, do all these things that I was used to doing, but I was like, damn it, you know, this isn't going to stop me from doing something. So I realized that just because I wanted to do something didn't mean that I knew how to do it. And so that sparked my interest once I got out to go to school to study exercise science. I went there for my undergraduate work. Honestly, like I said, just to kind of learn what the human body is, how it works, how it functions for my own personal needs. And then from there, I kind of just had some great experiences as far as internships and part-time jobs. I was like, damn, man, I could do this as a career. So I just kind of shifted my mindset from doing it so that I knew how to stay strong and be active for the rest of my life, but also how to help others kind of do the same thing.
I love it. It's probably one of the reasons that your mindset is the way it is. One of the things that attracted me to you was the way in which you see the world, your mindset. And now that I hear a lot of your background, I'm like, okay, yeah. That makes sense that when you're able to push through those kind of struggles, you're going to come out a better version of you out the other side.
Not always. I really think that I was fortunate in that I think I went into this whole experience, the surgeries and injuries and recovery, pretty much with a solid mindset. And so I think that definitely helped set me up for success in the long run. But yeah, anyone going through any injury or setback, it's I promise you, it's 100% mindset. If you go into it thinking negatively, you're going to come out thinking negatively and you're not going to be where you want to be. But going in with this positive mindset of, like I said, of how okay, this is going to change how I can do things, but it doesn't mean I can't do things. And so that really was just kind of that pilot light, so to speak, that flame that I just had to stay focused on the whole time.
I love it. Chase, you do so much now between the work you do with your brother and the apparel line, the podcast, which I'll be linking up here, your Forward podcast. Definitely everyone needs to check that out.
Yeah, thank you.
What does most people that I have as guests on the podcast, I'm always curious what their first kind of hour of the day looks like, particularly people that are high achievers like yourself that are doing so much. Do you have any sort of thing that you set up in the morning for the first hour of the day, first hour and a half of the day that sets you up for the rest? Or what does your first hour of your day look like?
Oh man, you're speaking my language. I'm all about routine and ritual. And it's funny, this is one of the things that I think Rob and I connected on when I had him on my podcast. We were just like, he was like, mate, talk to me about ritual. I'm probably butchering his Irish accent, but so my first hour when I wake is pretty much the same every day, Monday through Sunday. I'm an early riser. I always have been, and especially spending 6 years in the military. You know, it's really hard for me to sleep in past about 6:30, you know, maybe 7 o'clock. And so I wake up, I have a huge glass of water in my nightstand. I chug about 32 ounces of water. It just sets me for the day. It gets me hydrated. It's my step number one. From there, I wake up, take care of my morning business, because when you chug that much water, you get a lot of things flowing. So let's just say the regularity of my regularity is very important. It's very important, people. pooping is very important. Okay. If you're not, then you have a lot of internal problems. So I hydrate.
The title of the episode anyway. Pooping is very important.
So I start off hydrated, man. I start off going to the bathroom, and then, you know, I'm a big proponent of easing into my day so that I feel like the most control I have over that initial hour helps me have the most control over the rest of my day. So from there, I'll usually take the dog out, maybe fire up an espresso, down my morning greens. And then from there, it's just, okay, look at the to-do list. And I love getting a head start before most people are even waking up.
Yeah, it's a great way. Again, I'm very, what you're saying there, it's setting yourself up, taking control of that start of the day. Nothing beats it, because it's probably the only time when you're not reacting to the rest of the world through your friends, your family, social media. You have an hour or 2 hours where you can just get your head straight and get yourself set up for the day.
You said it, man. Absolutely.
I love it. So what does your general day look like then? Does it vary Monday to Friday? Do you have kind of a setup? Because I know you do so many different things between the podcast, clothing, the lifestyle brand, the different things you're setting up. What does your day look like then in general? How do you space it out?
Yeah, so Monday through Friday, I'm still, you know, on that 9 to 5 shtick. And so I, you know, start off my day the same way, like we're just talking about. And then depending upon the day, I cover one or two offices, but you know, more or less my day revolves around working with patients. And I call them patients. Most people call them clients, because my environment, I'm still in a very clinically oriented environment. I work in a concierge medical practice. And so that means people pay a premium, an annual premium. They get certain perks, certain guarantees to see their doctor. And part of those guarantees are getting to see someone like myself. And so I work in and also manage a wellness department for a regional East Coast concierge medical practice. So every day I'm working with patients. These are people that may be looking for exercise programming. They may be looking for a weight loss routine. They may be looking for a body composition analysis. We have a BIA machine. My office consists of a desk, but also got free weights and a treadmill behind me. So we'll do baseline exercise physiology testing, submax VO2 testing, upper body, lower body strength, endurance, flexibility assessments. So it's a lot of fitness, a lot of composition, nutritional guidance. And what I love about what I do in my current environment is that I get to work one-on-one with their physician. So people get to hear it from another source that, hey, your chronic illness, your chronic disease, or your potential to get this illness or this disease or arthritis or whatever is very, very strong. But you know what? Instead of getting you on a medication, or maybe we want to get you off of a medication, hey, go see the guy or the girl down the hall. They're going to give you some nutritional guidance. They're going to give you a workout program. They're going to help set you up for success in a different way, so that it's not just me shoving pills down your throat.
I love it.
So that's how I work pretty much every day. So I work with, you know, the patients there. I also have a panel of my own private clients through Everford Coach. Then I run, of course, the podcast. That's just, man, that schedule's all over the place. It's again, because my 9 to 5, I try to schedule certain people on the weekends or like on a remote day or during a lunch break or, you know, whatever that looks like. So I try to cram in podcast interviews whenever I can. Luckily, you know, my brother and I, Max, we have a good balance of everything that constitutes the EF brand. And so I manage the coaching and the podcast, and he handles all of the apparel stuff.
Amazing. What came first, the podcast, the clothing? The clothing was obviously first, and then you put the podcast off it.
Yeah, so the apparel came first. Max has been doing that for a few years now. And then 2016 was a big kind of year of growth and development for myself. And I realized one of the best ways that I was learning, that I was growing, was through audio, was through podcasts, was through audio books. And I was just like, you know what? Damn it, Chase, you can do that. I have the content. I have the education. I have the experience. And not to sound conceited, but I have the voice. You know, this is one thing that I always talk about this. You know, hey, pay attention to the gifts that you already have. Pay attention to what people are telling you that you're naturally good at. And my whole life, people are like, man, you got a good radio voice. So I was like, maybe I'll actually listen to them this time. So I just started taking advantage of these amazing people that I come in contact with, you know, really utilizing my network of, you know, people through Everford and through YouTube and every other social media aspect. I was like, man, Chase, you have come in contact with a lot smarter people. You have met some amazing people that have done some amazing things. A podcast would be an incredible platform to help share their story. So I just started interviewing people. I banked up about 6 or 8 episodes. I wanted to stay about 2 months ahead of myself. And then I set a goal, I set a timeline, and then just made myself stick to it. And then it was kind of fortuitous. January 22nd, 2017 was the anniversary of our dad's passing. You know, ever forward is this message that we got from him, from his time in the military, and this incredible mantra that he passed down to us growing up. And so it was just a great way to honor him and his legacy. And so I launched the podcast January 22nd, 12 years to the day of his passing. And I couldn't have thought of a better way to help pay it forward by sharing in a different way what Ever Forward means to me and my family.
And what does Ever Forward mean to you and your family? What's the message? I love it as a concept, but I think I make up my own story about what it means. What does it mean to you?
And that's awesome. You know, real quick, that you have your own meaning to it is one of the most amazing things that Max and my brother, my sister, my whole family and I have kind of realized is that people hear it, they see it, and it means something very special and different to every person, which is incredible. But to us, like I said, you know, it's something that is very close to home, very personal. Our dad, he was an Army guy himself. And every unit that you go to, they have kind of like a creed, a saying. And his first unit, theirs was Ever Forward. And so he picked it up from his time in the military. He instilled it in us growing up. And it's one of those things that, you know, you just hear your parents saying, hey, be a good person. Like, don't be a shithead. You know, it's like, you don't really pay attention to it when they're telling you as a kid. But, you know, going through his illness, he had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is an autoimmune disorder. He actually was diagnosed about a week after I left for boot camp when I left for the Army. So when he got sick, it was a really, really hard, difficult time because I wasn't there for my family. I was literally on the complete other side of the country. So from diagnosis to when he passed, it was about 18 months. And he had a really accelerated, difficult case of it. And it was just incredible to see. And this is how I kind of changed my lens, you know, looking at this situation positively, because it took me a long time to get through this. It's about, honestly, 10 years. A year ago, I wouldn't be able to talk to you about this without just breaking down. So looking at my father through this incredible, this terrible time in his life, he never complained. He never had a frown on his face. I never saw him cry. He was laughing and smiling as much as he could because his voice and his capability to speak and swallow was one of the first things that went away. But there was not a day in those 18 months that he just did not exemplify what it meant to live a life ever for, to just embrace the suck, like we always say, and just, you know, only allow yourself to look through this in an optimistic, positive way, because you know that's going to change every other aspect about the situation. So, you know, that's what it means to us. We saw our father, our best friend, this husband, this brother, this son go through this unreal experience. And so he showed us what it was like to really live a life ever forward. And so my brother had been able to apply that to a clothing line and the messaging and the incredible content that he produces on YouTube. And then, you know, I have it, every one of us has it tattooed on our body. And so it meant something different to each one of us in our own little special way. And so I thought the best way I could honor that was to bring other people on who I felt are living a life ever forward and to share their story in the same way that I can help share mine.
I love it. It just sounds like your dad had just stoic philosophy nailed into his DNA.
Yeah.
Good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the way you see the world, he sounds like an incredible person.
He was, man. Thank you for that. There wasn't a single person he came in contact with that just didn't change their life for the better. And like his funeral was one of those lit parties. I will never forget this till the day I die. We were in the lead hearse, myself, my stepmother, my brother, my sister, and our dad, of course, was in the casket behind us. And I remember going through a lot of really just anger, hatred, sadness. So I mean, insert every form of grief here. And I remember looking out the window, and man, I shit you not, it seemed like for days there was a car after a car after a car in this funeral procession. And it was just unreal the amount of people that turned out for his funeral. We had people that guys that he served with in the military 10 years ago. Every nurse in his hospital, when he was in the hospital last like 2-3 months he was alive, every staff member, every nurse, every orderly that was a part of his life came to say goodbye and give their respects. And this man, he touched everybody in an incredible way. And I was like, damn, Chase, like that's what you should be shooting for. That's the legacy you want to leave behind. You want to come in contact with anyone and everyone and better their lives, because in the same turn, you're going to be bettering yourself. And it was just, it was an incredible thing that I think finally clicked with me. It was different from just having this distinct memory. But you know, Chase, that's not just something to remember. That's something to act upon. That's something to do with your life. And so that's what Everforward means to me.
I love it. Like I regularly say to my audience, and I mentioned it even in my own book that did quite well, was that one of my goals in life is to leave the world better because I was here. And it sounds like that's exactly how your dad lived his life. Yes. And it's exactly what you're doing now. And you know, your brother Max, and I'm sure your sister and your family the same. So such a powerful thing to be given.
It's wild, man. It takes a long time to kind of really grasp, you know, a concept, to really put meaning to something, you know, with, you know, your content that you know, you put out. You clearly have a defined vision of what you want to do with your life and how not only can it better you, but at the same time, how can it serve others? And I really think that's the most important thing in anything and everything that we do. You know, how you do one thing is how you do all things. And I really think people should really grasp that and, you know, really remember that if you just live to serve others and live to just put other people on and share their story at the same time, it sounds so cliche and airy fairy and warm and fuzzy and all that shit. But, you know, it's so true, man. It's so true. That's why I love what I do. I love being a coach. I love working with people. I love training them. I love helping them realize that the version of themselves that they think is so unattainable and unrealistic, it is. It's inside. It's there. They just got to shed all the bullshit. They got to stop telling themselves the lies that they do every day. Because every time you wake up, every day, everything that you do that is not in a positive light, if you're looking through it in a negative lens, it's only going to self-feed. And so the second you can just shift that mindset and just tell yourself that the version of myself that I want to find is already there, you just got to put forth the work and just, you know, change your mindset, change your attitude, and you will begin to take the first step. And then that leads to the second step and the third step. And I promise you, your path will be unveiled.
I love it. It's so funny. I'm sure my audience will be massively resonating with you because we say a lot of the same things.
Hey, man, we're all saying the same stuff. Must be something to it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like I always say, my favorite quote that I intend to get tattooed on my hand, I'm doing a run next year, Marathon de Sabla. It's a 256-kilometer run through the Sahara Desert over 6 days. It's a self-sufficient run. So I'm going to get tattooed step by step on my hand.
That's awesome, man.
Step by step, because everything in life is, as you said, seeing it a certain way and then doing the right things every day, rep by rep, step by step, brick by brick, word by word, whatever it is, and then it adds up and then think you build on that. So it's such an awesome message.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Give you good luck on that.
Thank you, mate.
Certain days I miss running, others not so much.
I'm not a runner. It's on the high end of it scared me, and I was questioned, was this something I could physically do? And it's been a long time since I've had that story come up in my head. And I was like, okay, wow. Fuck, I have to do it now. Like, I'm like, if that's what comes up, you got to start attacking those feelings. So, that's
awesome, man.
Where that came from.
Yeah. I think people should, if something does scare you, that's definitely something you should do.
Yeah. 100%. When behind every fear is a person you want to be. So it's just, you know, and trying to live life that way.
There it is.
On top of that, with the people that you work with, because I know you work with an array of different people in different areas, is there any like one myth or one trend that you see with people that you're like, well, look, you need to see it in a different way? Is it a fitness thing, a training myth, a nutrition myth, a mindset, a way of seeing it? Is there any common trend that you find with people that you work with? Just for a lot of people that listen are into fitness or into training, they understand that mindset is such an important side of it. Yeah. But is there anything that you see regularly? Again, it could be completely away from that. A myth that you see in fitness, training, nutrition, or mindset that you're like, look, that's actually probably not right.
That's a really good question. And I think the fitness industry, the nutrition industry, coaching, training, whatever you want to call it, has come a long way over the years as far as debunking certain things, getting rid of bro science, introducing real science, you know, an anecdote and experience. I would probably say, I mean, I'm sure you experience the same thing. People come to you and they see, you know, you physically, or they see your lifestyle and like, you healthing every day. And they're like, okay, so you know what to do. You know, what do you do? What is the one thing? You know, what do I eat? What do I train? And I think this is where people get caught up in the misconception that there is one way to go about things. And this is honestly, every time everyone asks me, like, what do? I get this big smile on my face. Yeah. I'm like, sir, ma'am, girl, bro, you don't know. Like, I'm going to tell you, the best way to achieve anything is the way that you're going to keep coming back, the way that you like to do it. And it's so funny to see people's response. They're like, wait, like, you're not just going to give me like the workout or the eating plan and I'm going to get all the results that I want. I'm like, no, because what works for me may or may not work for you. Literally every body is different. And I think people, that's why they kind of shoot themselves in the foot from the get-go, is because they get so caught up and they can only do this one way. They can only eat this one way. They can only exercise this one way. And then they wind up resenting it, you know, weeks, months, years down the road. And then they plateau or they stop entirely. It's because they never went in it for the right reasons to begin with. I always tell everyone, yep, don't worry about your eating plan. Don't worry about your nutrition, your exercise, whatever. You have to always start with your why, to quote one of my favorite authors and speakers, Simon Sinek. Start with why. You know, because if you have a reason why you want to do something, why you want to eat better, why you want to work out more, why you want to go for a run, then no matter what that looks like for you, your frequency, your intensity, whatever, you're always going to go back to that reason. So there is no one way to accomplish anything. It has to be your way.
Yeah, I love it. Like I always say regularly, it's funny that that's the one you bring up, because I think I say this nearly every day on Snapchat or Instagram stories, that if there was one training program or one nutritional plan or one supplement, everybody would take that and they'd look the way they wanted to look.
And we'd be out of jobs, right, man?
Yes, there would be no fitness industry, you know? Yeah. But it's amazing. I love the Buddha quote. It sounds like you're kind of talking on that there, that if you can't be happy on the journey, how will you be happy at the destination?
Exactly.
And it's very much like that, finding what works best for you, what's in alignment with your goals, the foods that you enjoy that are working towards that goal. Yeah. And then when it becomes a habit, it becomes automatic. And then you just make the really automatic choices.
Yeah. And not to say that there are wrong and right ways to do things, specifically talking in, you know, the fitness, the training, exercise world. You know, of course, always we want to make sure people are doing movements and exercises the correct way. So to that aspect, I would say, yes, there is a wrong and right way to do things. But as far as just the mindset and the action, there is no one thing. If you have to find something that you enjoy to do, you're going to keep coming back to. I kind of usually reverse engineer my training, coaching with people. I'm like, okay, tell me about your lifestyle. Tell me about your personality. You know, do you travel? Do you have high stress? You know, what does every other variable in your life look like? And only then will I begin to make, you know, nutrition recommendations, exercise recommendations, give any sort of programming whatsoever. Because if I give you something out of the gate without really learning about the rest of your life, odds are you're not going to be long-term successful with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great approach. I love that. Okay, I'm going to move on to my favorite part, Chase, which is the rapid fire questions.
Hey, nice, man. Let's go. All right.
So you can literally answer these how you want. You can one word answer. You can expand on some of them if you want. It's totally up to you in terms of what direction you want to take. That some are smack bang answers. Some are, right, I'm going to expand on this and flesh it out. Ready? Nice. When you think of the word successful, who's the first person that comes to your mind and why? And I'm going to expand this one outside of a family member, because I would imagine your dad is probably the first
one. Oh, man, you're good. You're good. When I think success, who comes to mind? Honestly, okay, so not too far out of the family circle, but my best friend growing up through middle school, high school, we're sort of kind of touch and go now, but it's definitely the person that I can go to and pick right back up. So she has been there for me in every positive and negative way. She's someone that just really exemplifies, I think, happiness and a good life, being a good wife, having a marriage and being a mom. Just, you know, when I think of her, Katie, if you're listening to this, I'm gonna give you a shout out. You are the most successful person I think in my life.
I love it. And it's funny because one of my favorite quotes is the Jim Rohn quote, that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And
oh, yeah.
For you to have probably your dad come as number one, Katie come in there as well, it just shows that the reason you are the way you are is because of the people that you spend your time with and you're around.
Amen, brother. Amen.
I love it. What purchase of $100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 6 or 12 months or in general?
You're looking at it right now, this little guy right here. So you can't see this, but I'm holding up my little kind of travel portable condenser mic. And this is what it all started with. This was the mic I bought to start my podcast. And this was the catalyst for me to be where I am right now, really in the past over a year now. Hard to believe, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. It's
about $65, yeah.
Amazing. I must link that up in the description as well, because there's definitely people listening here. They're like, oh, I'm going to go do that. Do you have a quote you live your life by or think of often?
Well, I'm sure everyone's going to guess what I'm going to say here. You know, definitely, of course, Ever Ford. But going away from the obvious, I would say, I think I mentioned this earlier, embrace the suck. And that's something that I picked up pretty much in my military career. Anyone who's been in the military, you're going to hear that. It just gets shoved down your throat. Embrace the suck. And, you know, it sounds really harsh and you know, weird up front. But when you think about it, it's just, you know, whatever struggle you're going through, whatever obstacle is before you, don't run away from it. Don't try to go around it, but literally just embrace it, because that's the only way you're going to learn anything. That's the only way you're going to figure out the way to go through a similar problem in the future. Just embrace it. Don't fear it. Embrace the suck.
I would imagine, from having gone through your Instagram story, seeing that you read The Daily Stoic, which is one of my favorites, Ryan Holiday.
Yeah, books, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Obstacle is the way too.
Absolutely. Obstacle is the way, ego is the enemy, and his most recent work, The Perennial Seller. So
I haven't read the last one yet.
Classics.
I'm on that. Yeah. As soon as we get off this, I'm downloading it on Audible. Okay, so what, this one I'm dying to hear myself, because I read, again, I'd see on your social media as well how often, how many different books you're reading. I try and get through 2 or 3 books a week myself, between audio and physical books. Is there any book on the planet that you think everyone would benefit from reading? You may be able to, you might have to branch this into 2 or 3 books, but is there, for example, for me, I read Tony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within, which was a book that allowed me to break through a lot of my own limitations. Obstacle is the Way allowed me to introduce me to Stoic philosophy. So there's a couple of books that really, really changed the direction of my life that I tend to recommend to people. Of course, you need to be in a certain place to accept the information in order to get the benefit.
Yes. But
do you have any books like that, that you're like, a lot of people will get benefit from reading?
Going back to Ryan Holiday, man, if you haven't read this, this is, anyone who comes to me and asks, hey, what's a book you're reading or what would you recommend? I always tell them the same thing. And I always say that every human being should read this book. Ego is the Enemy. Ryan Holiday's Ego is the Enemy. It's a short read. It's a small book. But man, I went into it just kind of because I heard so much about it. And I feel like I do a decent job of keeping my ego in check. And I hope no one who knows me would say that I'm an egotistical guy. But man, this book just showed me so many ways that I was putting my ego in front of things that were going to give me success and that were going to give others success. And it just, I read it and I was just like, oh, holy shit, Chase, you're an egotistical asshole. But it's such an amazing read, and I go back to it frequently, and I really think that, like you said, it is the best book to read, the best way to prepare you to get into that mindset so that you can receive other forms of information and just remove the fog that you have been living your life in, and just set you up for success in a lot of different ways. So I think Ego is the Enemy, hands down, my number one book for all of mankind. And then a quick second is, you know, once you can kind of realize what you're supposed to be doing, is a big on nutrition. I think, you know, everyone has to eat no matter what. No one has to work out or exercise. So I think kind of getting away from the philosophy stuff is Marion Nestle's What to Eat. It's came out, I think, like in the late 90s. Don't quote me on that, but she just does an amazing job. She's been a long-term nutritionist of just kind of combing through grocery store shopping, what food is, the food politics behind it. I probably learned the most about my foundations in nutrition from her book, What to Eat.
Wow. Okay. I haven't checked that one out, so I need to get on that one as well.
It looks like Nestle, like the candy company Nestle, but it's pronounced Nestle. Yeah. Marion Nestle.
Class, I remember that. I actually wrote down here how to spell it. I'm like, oh, I spelled it wrong. Okay, next one. What is the worst advice you see or hear being dispensed in your world? So that could be via social media. That could be in the fitness industry. Is there any piece of advice that you're like, oh, it kind of makes you cringe, or you realize that that's probably not the best way that people should be putting this message across. Is there anything that comes to mind when I say that?
Yeah, and I think this may be answering a question. Let me know if it's not. So I see social media is this amazing platform. It's this incredible thing that has just sprouted over the last couple of years. And it's a great platform, but it's also a very dangerous platform. And I think a lot of people who have social media success, particularly in the health and wellness and fitness industry, they automatically assume, or they make the assumption, that they know what the hell they're talking about. And that may be true, it may not be. Clearly, you know, someone who is ripped and shredded and can deadlift 700 pounds or whatever, they've been doing something right for them. But then when they turn their platform of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, millions of people who follow them as a way to talk about the human body, exercise science, nutrition, physiology, I kind of have a little bit of some cringe about it, because when I hear them talk about certain things, I'm like, no, like, yes, you clearly know what you're doing for your body and it's worked, but I don't think that always gives people the privilege to share or coach or train others or provide specific content around that. It's a big responsibility when people are looking up to you that way, and you have to be very delicate about how you go about it.
That's literally exactly what I've said that a couple of times. I think you've articulated that better than I ever could. Is there something over the last few years that you've changed your mind about? So for example, again, I'm all quotes today, but I love the Einstein quote that if a year that you don't give up one of your best loved ideas is a year wasted. And there was a time when I used to have different dogmatic approaches to nutrition or to training. Like, for example, I for a while thought that high volume training, everybody needed to do high volume training and this would work for everybody. Whereas I learned that, you know what, it worked for me and this body part at this particular moment in time. Is there anything like that, that in training, nutrition, or lifestyle or mindset in general, that you've changed your mind about in the last few years?
You know, a little bit of everything. Yeah. So I'll kind of touch quickly on each one. So training, I started off, once I got to a point physically where I could really train more intensely than I was used to after my surgeries and recovery, I was just a big proponent of the bro split. I was like, you know, I got to work out 5-6 days a week. I'm gonna do chest. I'm gonna do arms. I'm gonna do high volume. I'm gonna do this. You know, I'm just gonna get jacked. And so, and then it kind of shifted into more, you know, strength training, you know, more powerlifting. Because again, as the years went on, my body could handle physically more load, more resistance against it. I was like, oh man, I'm chasing, getting stronger. Like, you know, screw the split. You know, who trains for hypertrophy? That's stupid. You got to be able to just rip it, you know? And I think so my training over the, really this year has gone away from, okay, why are you training that way? Going back to your why, you know, start with your why. I was doing that for the wrong reasons. I was doing that because that's what other people were doing. That's what was hot at the moment. But now I'm training for me. I'm training for how my body feels that day. That's why I don't train on any type of program. I walk in, you know, okay, what did I do yesterday? What might I do tomorrow? How's my body feeling today? And I'm just going to make this count. And that looks like whatever it looks like to me that day. And then in the kind of the philosophy lifestyle way, I really learned how to stop trying to change people, or I should really say stopping myself from getting frustrated and upset with others when they weren't showing up how I was showing up. And kind of going back to, you know, Ryan Holiday's work, looking at, you know, how best to show up in any situation, stop trying to change other people, just really recognizing that, no, Chase, it's not them like disrespecting you or like, you are right and they're wrong. It's just, that's how they are. And really through like Gretchen Rubin's, The Four Tendencies, and even reading and referencing the five love languages, you know, my personal relationships, with my wife, my family, it's just really understanding that everybody shows up in a different way. And it's up to everyone else around them to realize that's how they best communicate. That's how they best receive love. That's how they best send love, you know. And you really have to, kind of cater around those. And if you want that relationship to work, if you want it to flourish, whether it's with at your job, your boss, your subordinate, your peers, your siblings, your mom, your spouse, whatever. You really have to take pause and look at how they are showing up and then how you can best serve them if you want that to grow. So I stopped trying to change people and started showing up in a different way for them.
I love it. I'll link up all those books too. That Five Love Languages gave me a lot as well.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear, man. Yeah, Five Love Languages. I recommend everyone to read it. If you're not in a relationship, if you've been in a relationship, if you're single, dating, married, whatever, it's just amazing. It teaches you the ways in which we all communicate differently and how you can best share that with those around you and how to pick up on how they're communicating around you.
Yeah, that's one of those books that even if you're listening to it when you're single, you're like, oh, if I had this book when I was in a relationship.
I know, maybe Jay would still be with me, right?
Yeah, 100%, I love it. Okay, last one. How has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success, or do you have a favorite failure of yours?
Wow, that's a good question, man. A favorite failure.
So for example, I can tie in a couple of mine because I've got plenty of them. Yeah. When, for those of you who are listening, my audience know my background. I was a elementary school teacher, primary school teacher, and I was trying to get my personal training business off the ground. This is my third attempt because I went broke trying to get a personal training business off the ground when I was working as a teacher. I left teaching. And then my mom and dad lent me money to start my own business, and I blew through it in 6 weeks living in London as a personal trainer. I was broke going through my couch, literally getting money for the bus. I had to go tail between my legs back to teaching. But as a result, now my business probably does so well because I'm so sharp with finances in terms of I know exactly where every penny is going. And that failure of spending on needless stuff, I rented a space, I bought equipment, didn't think about the future in terms of the months ahead, and I was completely broke. The only time in my life when I had 000 on my bank balance, and that failure set me up for probably allowed me to step out of it and have a successful business off the back of being able to run it financially. And that was, again, how it set me up for future success, just to kind of give you a concept on from a business point of view. There's loads, but that's just to kind of give you a little bit of concept from my background.
That's a great story, man. It's awesome you could turn that around. That's just really shows your character and integrity. So let me answer it in kind of maybe a different way, a way that I thought I failed, the way that I thought I failed others was kind of going back to my beginnings in the military when my dad got sick and stuff. I tried to get out of the army. You can get extenuating circumstances and extreme hardship on your family. If you can prove that, they'll cut your contract and you can get out. And I dropped the paperwork to my command. This was maybe 6 months into my career, and I tried to get out, and my dad found out about it, and he's like, fuck no. We're staying in. He flew out to California where I was stationed at the time. He spent 4 days teaching me, showing me, talking to me about, you know, why I should stay on this path and why he shouldn't let this deter me from my path that I had created for myself. And so he did his thing. He worked his magic. He convinced me to stay in the military. And honestly, for the whole duration, when he was sick, when he passed away, the whole 6 years I was gone, I really felt like I was failing my family because I couldn't be there for them. And I'm the older brother. And so I kind of have this like innate desire to want to take care of everybody and just, you know, provide for people and physically just be there through this terrible time in my family. So for years, honestly, 10 years, man, I felt like I failed my family and that I wasn't there in their time of need. But this past year of self-development and growing and reflection, all this stuff, I realized, you know what, Chase, no, you didn't fail. Like, cause we all had to go through that process in our own way. And up until recently, man, I finally have become grateful. And this is going to sound bad, but just listen to me here. I became grateful for my father passing away. I became grateful for those terrible times and that hard lesson that we all had to learn, my family, my siblings, because it made me who I am today. And where I thought I failed everybody, I look back, you know, my sister is thriving as a cosmetologist. My brother is thriving, you know, if it wasn't for that time, I mean, who knows, maybe we wouldn't have Everforward. Maybe Everforward apparel wouldn't exist. I wouldn't have this podcast, this coaching. I wouldn't have this tattoo on my arm. You know, we wouldn't have this meaning. And you know, where I thought I failed myself and where I thought I failed my family turned out to be the greatest blessing in disguise.
I love that. That's such an amazing answer.
Thanks, man.
Mate, thank you so much. I know how crazy your schedule is, so I appreciate it so much. I'm going to link up all of your stuff in the show notes across my social media. Where is the best place for people to find out more about you?
Best place to find more about me, you can simply go to chasetuning.com. It's where I just have everything streamlined. So my kind of just general content about me, all the side hustles that I got going on. It's the podcast is linked up there. You can find Everforward Radio, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Everforward Apparel. I do a YouTube channel, Instagram. Just search Chase Tuning. I'll pop up.
Awesome. Chase, thank you so much.
Brian, it's been awesome, man. Thanks for having me on.